God has made my heart faint. Perhaps your heart fainted when you arrived and again saw we were still in the book of Job. The book of Job is not actually one of those works, one of those books that we turn to for joyful songs. It is mournful. Last week we discovered Job was a righteous man. He even went the step of seeking to do the right thing in relation to his own children. And yet, through events beyond his control, his life was wrenched from his hand. His children, his wealth, but not his life. And he ended up tearing his garment, tossing ashes upon his head, and grieving on a garbage heap. That's where we left it last week. Does your heart sink as you think about starting out from there? The book of Job performs a very interesting function in the Bible. It is a place where questions can be asked, and it's okay to ask these questions. In the order in which we have received this particular book, it follows the story of God's people through some bright spots, like becoming a nation among other nations that actually has a little bit of power, through the loss of that power and the sending away of the powerful people into exile. But then comes the story of their return. This is told not once, but twice in the books of Kings and then the books of the Chronicles. And we have the story of the rebuilding of Jerusalem in Ezra and in Nehemiah. And then in the order in which we have received it, we have that marvelous little book telling not the story of a man, but of a woman, Queen Esther. A story, yes, of faith, but a story in which does not really mention God all that much. And then we have Job. A story in which, as we read it, Job struggles with the absence, the felt absence of God, when all he wants to do is to take his case before the Creator of the universe. Now, this morning, in a broad sweep, this is not using a small brush. We are using a large brush. The huge center section of this book, which encompasses many chapters, is actually a long conversation. A conversation where Job is demanding to be heard from this God whom he wonders, "Where are you?" A conversation between Job and three others, and a fourth who comes along. A conversation that is rather difficult to read. I don't know about you, but I have a hard time reading the book of Job. This week, I sat down and I was going to read the whole thing in one setting. And Janet, who happened to be here at that point, I kept on coming out because, like most men, I'm a little bit attention deficit disorder. And this is not an action movie. This is not a guy flick. Though it involves guys, it is conversation. Now, there are significant questions that are asked, but they all boil down to the questioning of some of the basic assumptions that we have. What are some of our basic assumptions? What are some of the things that you live by? That, you know, for instance, that what goes around comes around. That those who are bad will eventually receive their just rewards. And that those who are good will in the end prevail. Isn't that some of what we live by? Well, those things are called into question by Job. Now remember, if you will, last week we had it all begin with a conversation between Satan and God. And Satan, who were saying, "Now, take away all the good things that you have given this man, and he will curse you." But what does it mean to curse God? Does it mean to raise questions? If so, then Job didn't pass the test. He failed. But does that really mean? Is that what cursing God really means? Or does cursing God mean to ignore? The lens through which I choose to view this whole center section is the lens that was lifted up at district conference yesterday. We had a time when a question was asked. What does God want our church to be? And we had an open mic time where various different people came up to the microphone. I had different reactions to the various things that were shared at that point. But a fellow came up whom some of you may remember because he worshipped here for a while. His first name is Peter. I've forgotten his last name. Anybody remember?
Mallow.
Peter Mallow. And in just a few sentences, he didn't say very much, but he called us into being friends, real friends, for others. The whole gift of friendship. And that's the lens that I choose to enter this section of Job. Because here we have a man who has lost everything except, well, his wife and three friends who come and they sit with him. And that is part of the good news in this story. How many of us face into difficult circumstances without friendship? Friendship is a dire need that we all have. And Job had three friends who left their homes, left their livelihoods, and for however long came and sat with their friend. You know, if we have some problem with some of the things they may have said to them when the time came to speak, this should not be forgotten. As I said last week, we all wonder when our friends are going through tough circumstances, what should we say? And one thing I said, well, maybe first of all, we should just close our mouths and listen. And that is indeed what these three men did. They sat for the longest time. And the first one who spoke was Job. Now, this isn't not the kind of conversation we have every day. It's sort of like a song where one person sings a verse and another person sings a verse, and it goes back and forth in that way. And it's a long series of monologues more than a dialogue. But it is dialogical. It's a back and forth. And Job lets God have it with both barrels. Now, Job's friends, they're with him for a while. And they're compassionate to a point. But if you read in this story, there comes a point when they just have had it. And they come back at him with some negative stuff. And that's natural, folks. It's natural. It's not natural, for instance, when somebody is really letting God have it, to want to defend God. Of course, the basic point is that God's big enough. God can defend God's self. Some interesting things happen along the way of this discussion that are good. And for all the negatives, that because at certain points, I got to say, these friends started attacking Job. If you read the story, they were questioning him in all sorts of ways that he brought on. And that in a sense, you're cursing God by what you're saying. He says, no, I want God to account. I want God to talk to me because God is feeling very absent. But an interesting thing happens. And as I was reading it, I was seeing here that the conversation, if you read it, lapses over into prayer. An amazing thing. At one point, Job is talking to his friends, first person to first person, about the second person, God. And then the conversation laps over into a first person conversation with God. And that's something we've got to say that these friends of Job made possible by their very presence. And that's a good thing. Now, Job's prayers are not exactly the kind of prayers we might pray, but they were very honest prayers. Let me lift up some of them. I have, how many prayers did I see here? 1, 2, 3, 4. I saw 4, possibly 5 prayers in here. In this, I will not restrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. When I say my bed will comfort me, my couch will ease my complaint, then you scare me with dreams and terrify me with visions. He's talking to God there. And then he goes in and we're hearing echoes of the 8th Psalm when Job says, what are human beings that you make so much of them and you set your mind on them? We hear the echoes of another psalm. And here's psalms that through dwelling on them, they become a part of us. But he does some interesting things with them. He says, if I wash myself with soap and cleanse my hands with lye, yet you will plunge me into filth and my own clothes will abhor me. In another prayer, do not condemn me, O God. Let me know why you contend against me. Does it not seem good to you to oppress, to despise the work of your hands and favor the schemes of the wicked? Your hands fashioned and made me, and now you turn and destroy me. In another prayer, Job says, withdraw your hand far from me, and do not let dread of you terrify me. Then call, and I will answer, or let me speak, and you reply to me. How many are my iniquities and my sins? Make me know my transgression and my sin. Job is being honest with God. But you know, that honesty was made possible by his friends. You know, we don't always know what to say when people are going through difficult times. Maybe you felt that way in relation to me, you know, going through my recent marital stuff, or to folks who are facing into cancer or other illness. Or what do you say to Eugenia and Lydia through times like this? And be there. And that's good. And when these persons are able to speak to God, that's a wonder. That's a glory. That's good news. Now, I know I've painted with broad brushes here, this center section, because it is really just a series of complaints with defense. And then along comes another fellow by the name of Elihu. And I'm not sure really what to do about Elihu, because Elihu comes in and he takes over with a monologue. And some scholars have said that really this is a later import into the story. That down the line, some rabbis thought that these friends didn't defend God enough, and so they needed to add a little bit more. I don't know. But I do know that friendship is so very important, and the time that it takes to get through the stuff that needs to be gotten through is very, very important. We have lifted up another this morning. Another who didn't sin, and yet bad things happened. And yet this other we say was God's gift. Because this other took on all that junk that we carry upon himself and made possible us to be able to come to God as we are. This God who so often feels invisible. We call Jesus our Redeemer. But you know what? That word Redeemer, one of the most important, well, I can't say most important, but most very significant affirmations of our faith that the church down through the years has made about Christ. Did you know who spoke those words of that affirmation, "My Redeemer lives"? It was Job. It was Job. You know, at a certain point, there was a guy by the name of Handel. Didn't he write something called The Messiah? And he quoted from Job, "I know that my Redeemer liveth." In fact, in our hymnal, we've got two songs that start out that way. "I know that my Redeemer lives." Well, do you want to hear where it comes from? It's from right smack dab in the middle. In fact, why don't you read the words with me? They're printed in your bulletin at the top of it. Now, we are taking these words, which I got to tell you, in their original setting, are quite depressing. But we are taking them and making them an affirmation of faith. Do you know that? Let's read them together. "For I know that my Redeemer lives, and that at the last he will stand upon the earth. And after my skin has been thus destroyed, then in my flesh I shall see God, whom I shall see on my side, and my eyes shall behold not another. My heart faints within me." It's a different kind of fainting. A fainting from the very presence of God. Our final hymn, we're using one setting that comes from an old songbook. And it's in a minor key. And I thought that was appropriate because, you know, the book of Job is written in a minor key. But it is a major affirmation. Would you stand and sing together with me, "I know that my Redeemer lives," number 277 in your hymnal.